Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And welcome to Sturkers and Radar Uncut, our monthly podcast brought to you by Ping.
Play your best. Get that driver out, grab that chief, and rip that Ping driver right down the middle like Bubba Watson.
It's episode 6. And Radar, I don't feel like I've spoken to you forever. So we had our Ryder Cup episode, which was brilliant. You've been globetrotting. I've been at home in the studio at Sky and growing a baby. So I feel like I haven't seen or spoke to you for ages. So how are you doing?
All right, you, and how's that baby coming along?
Yeah, he's cooking nicely. I've got about 7 or 8 weeks to go, and then my life is going to change forever.
You got a name?
I've got a couple of names. Henrik, Sergio.
Oh, shut up.
Brooks.
I mean, what, are you going to go through the whole lot? I mean, what? You what?
Definitely not Wayne, that's for sure. Definitely not Wayne.
No.
No, I am...
Colin.
Monty.
All these great golfers.
Justin's a popular one. No, I'm quite, what do you think of Sebastian? I'm quite liking Sebastian. Do we like that?
No.
No,
Sebastian's not the go. Hi, no. How you doing? My name's Sebastian. Seb. Seb's all right. Seb's all right. Seb's a nice name. Seb Coe, what a champion.
Seb Sturk, I thought that'd be quite a cute name. Well, feel free, any suggestions, let me know. Have a think, and maybe you can tell us on the next
one. Chuck Sturk.
Yeah, it's got a nice ring to it, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has, yeah.
So listen, how was Dubai? I know that was a pretty cool week, but I know you've been out there for a couple of weeks. It's been nice for you to get back out on the road. Obviously, you were in the States before that. How fun was it to head to the Middle East end of the year?
Yeah, it was really hot. But it was great. The first week, I'd just been in the UK for a few weeks off, and it was great. And I'm back in the UK now for a couple of weeks before I go back to Australia. But, yeah, it was really great to get back out there and watch some good golf. And that second week, the DP World, the big one, was such a success. Colin Morikawa just playing so very well. I didn't see that coming. I really didn't. Rory got himself to in front after about 11 or 12 holes. And I honestly thought he'd pull away. He missed the putt on 11, 12 and 13 and then didn't birdie 14. And that was his undoing. A lot of people go, well, he went from leading to running six. Look, it happens. It happens. And Rory McIlroy, it wasn't his best night. And no one can say Rory McIlroy does that very often, but it just happened. And Morikawa started to speak through them all, through the leaderboard, birding five out of the last seven holes. Usually that gets it done. He's a deserved champion, won a WGC event this year. He won the Open Championship, and now he's Europe's number one, the DP World Champion.
Right, we've talked about this. We talked about this at the Open. He's a quality player, obviously, but it's the maturity that still blows my mind at 24. Now, look at his resume. Look at what he's achieved. He's a two-time major winner. He's Europe's number one, as you just said. He's just produced that performance. Best iron player in the game. It's staggering, isn't it? But still the maturity. And I listened to that interview that he did, you know, post-round talking. He's got it all, hasn't he? He really has. But what?
Yeah.
How do you kind of quantify that maturity at that age, the ability to do what he does and to handle the situation, handle the pressure at that age? It blows my mind still.
Yeah, his upbringing must have been very good. His parents, you know, full credit. To be truthful with you, I don't think I've ever seen a golfer come along such as him. I've seen golfers come along with personalities such as his, but they haven't been successful.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah.
I'm getting a guy, Colin Morikawa, that's such a beautiful guy, like a lovely person. And so very often we've seen so many lovely people come along in our game and haven't been a success. But this guy is. He's very intelligent. He's always got a smile on his face. He has time for everyone. He's articulate. He's everything that we want in our game. He's come along at such a young age. But where has he come from? You know, it's so very impressive. A two-time major champion already. We're blessed to have him in our game. That's how cool this kid is. I've said it a few times, you know, he took like a year out to work out who his manager was going to be, who his caddy was going to be, where he was going to play. So he thinks about what he's going to do. He doesn't obliterate golf courses. He doesn't bully golf courses. He's more of a tactician. And he doesn't hit it overly long. He hits it long enough. He reaches par five, has a great short game. And the only thing that stands out with his game is his iron play, but the rest of it, it's all better than just competent. He's, you know, he's going to be the number one player in the world. I don't think there's any doubt. Or did he go to number one, or is he still at number two?
I'm not sure. Yeah, he's two.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And I just think, I love that. You say, we've talked about it before, but you say it with sport, that kind of, that level of humility, you know, he's a humble guy combined with absolute success. Often you see like the top guys, don't you? Or, you know, to get to that elite position, they've kind of got that ego. Obviously you need to have an ego. You need to be hugely self-confident. You need to have that kind of swagger about you, that level of arrogance. But his ability to combine that level of success with a personality, which is just, explodes with humility. It's just, I think it's absolutely fascinating.
You tell me a champion like this who's been this nice, a golfer.
Yeah.
You know, you at home who listen to our, and there's loads of you who listen to our podcast. Who?
Yeah, exactly. He reminds me a little bit like Federer in the tennis world, the kind of, you know, they get to the top and it's like, you're Mr. Nice and you're so good.
Great example. But we haven't really got one of those in golf.
No.
We have, but they aren't a success.
Yeah.
You know, if you haven't got the mongrel in you in golf, they say you can't be a great player. Well, that's been put to rest. Colin Morikawa.
Exactly. And, you know, you look at Tiger, you know, in his absolute heyday, he was ruthless. You know, he would go to a tournament, he wouldn't engage with anyone. He was like, for me to do what I need to do, tunnel vision, I don't talk to anyone, I don't engage with fans, I'm blinkered, I do my thing. And then he achieved that level of success. You know, a lot of people say Ricky Fowler, he's too nice. He needs to get rid of that nice edge to be more successful. I know we're talking about completely different golf games here in terms of Fowler. And
no, but you're right there. That's not a bad example either. Ricky Fowler, you know, he's one of the nice guys, but he's a little more ruthless than Morikawa. But maybe Morikawa's just got it all deep down within him and he's, you know, but,
yeah,
you know, evidently he travels around with his girlfriend or his wife or his partner and they just cruise around together and they go and do these things and he's got bacon on his golf ball because they both like bacon. I mean, it's bizarre. It's fantastic stuff. It really is. We're looking forward so much to watching him play. I didn't give him a chance of winning on Sunday. I really didn't. And next minute he's coming through the field and he wins. Full credit to him, man. Full credit.
Full credit. He's a class act. We love him. You mentioned Rory there, but all the pictures went out on social media afterwards. He ripped his shirt, didn't he, in anger and frustration. 74 on Sunday. He was fuming when he walked off that golf course. Do you kind of like to see that passion, though? You know, a few people in the past have questioned Rory. We saw at the Ryder Cup what it meant to him in tears in that interview. He's talked maybe about playing down his emotions a bit as a way of self-preservation. Did you like to see that raw emotion of, do you know what? I'm annoyed now. I'm going to show my emotion. That stung. That hurt for me. And I'm not happy about it.
I love to see it. Yeah, good on him. I mean, yeah, bring it on. Everyone can see now. We know, you and I, Sarah. A lot of people have said in the past, oh, he doesn't care that much. I mean, they don't know what they're talking about. Rory McIlroy can't be the success he has been and will be in the future without, you know, wanting it so badly. And, you know, he just got upset and ripped his shirt. And people are, you know, well, who cares?
I think it was. I think it's a good thing. That's what I'm saying. I wanted to see that emotion.
Yeah, I know.
How much it hurt, how much it stung, I thought was great.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Great to see it. Great to see it. I saw last night Harry Diamond. I said, oh, he's ripping his shirts, Harry. And we just had a chuckle. We're on the same flight. So it was, it just didn't happen for Rory McIlroy. But there you go. Bad week, finishes sixth. You know, he won his last start before that. People expect Rory to win all the time, but people can't win all the time unless you're a Tiger. You know, he was 23 or 24% of win ratio. But, you know, a good week. And ripping his shirt, good on him. I mean, you know, let there be many more rips.
Exactly. Now, he's not rivaling you in the chest hair stakes, though, is he?
No. Well, I imagine Rory would be able to afford to get down there and get the sticky tape on and rip it. But me, I'm a hairy man. That's the way it is.
And can I just say, we're going to introduce our guest in a minute. Can I just say, you've been in Dubai. I know you've had the builders in your flat. You're getting a bit of decoration work done. But you are sitting there with your pants and socks on a clothes liner behind you.
They're not mine.
Oh, they're not. I couldn't imagine you in those little grey budgie smugglers, actually, Radar.
No. Well, that's quite embarrassing now. You made me blush there, Sarah.
Brilliant. I've got an image in my head. I just can't get out of my head now. Thanks for that.
No, they're not mine. Trust me, I've only just got home. So,
yeah. Yours are the pink ones with the yellow dots, aren't they?
Those pants up there. Actually, what is that melted Mars bar in the bottom of them?
Oh my God. Anyway, let's move on. Time to introduce this month's guest. Well, delighted to say that Johnny Longsocks McLaren is our very special guest. Johnny Longsocks, big fan of yours. We've been buddies on tour for a while. I know Radar's a big fan of yours as well. Great to have you with us and thanks for joining us on the pod.
Thanks very much, Sarah. Radar.
Good on you, Johnny. Good on you, son.
Now, Johnny Longsocks, just back from Dubai, as is Radar. Now, I was keen to get you on, well, firstly, because you're a top bloke, but also there was a little report recently in the media. We know that you're leaving, or you and Paul Casey are parting ways. And there was a report basically, I know you weren't that happy with the headline, but just talk us through, I guess, your decision effectively to hang up your caddying bib. You've been doing it for what? How many years? Obviously, we know about the success with Luke Donald, amazing success with Casey as well. Why now to kind of hang up the bib and say, do you know what, I just want to spend a bit more time at home?
Sarah, most of the things that have been said have been pretty accurate, to be honest. The main thing, and I want to first out touch on mental health issues. And, you know, I know that this is traveling around the world during this COVID period of the last couple of years has been very difficult for everyone involved. So not just in golf, but all sports, and pretty much everyone involved in travel has found things difficult. My situation is my children are now 7 and 8. Actually, my son's going to be 8 today. So 8 and 9, let me get that right.
happy birthday.
That's a good thing, isn't it? And yeah. Having to travel across to meet Paul at work for the last 6 years has been fine, and I'm not too bad with that, but the last couple of years has made it mentally and physically rather tough. And I'm missing my family growing up. So it's been a decision that has sort of taken the last 6 months of my life, really, that I've been making this, thinking about doing this. And now finally I've said to Paul that it's the time.
And, you know, you've had, as I said, amazing success. How tough is it? It's a great job, isn't it, John? Let's be honest. You know, I know you've got a great relationship with Paul, like you had with Luke. It's a great job. You travel the world. You see your mates. See,
the phone, Sarah's going already. That's another player on the phone.
They can wait.
Already. He's got, Casey's gone. That's Tiger.
Yeah. Tiger's back practicing. And yeah, he wants you to know, Johnny.
We might be back about the same time.
But in all seriousness, how tough is the decision to walk away from a great job like that?
Paul and I have been all very transparent and very honest with each other, and we initially agreed 5 years. When the COVID break occurred, he basically said to me, you owe me at least 6 months, because we didn't play for 6 months. So one more year was tacked on to the end of our contract, if you like. Mm. And that meant through to the end of this year. My visa actually runs out on the 18th of February to work for Paul. So the timing was such that it would require me to go back into immigration and get a new visa, which are attached to the player if you're going to do it completely legitimately, which I have. So it was as much the timing of that. The 6 years that we've had, I've been very proud of, and I'm really pleased with what we've achieved. And our relationship has actually grown and got stronger. But that all said, it just is the right time for Paul and I to go our separate ways. I think if I was just going to take 3 months off, for instance, it would probably, I don't know, the person that took my place for a while would feel like I was a shadow looming in the background. And I don't really want that. And I want Paul to be able to continue his career, which is awesome. And for the person to take my place to potentially better me and perhaps win Paul a major.
Who's he going to call now then, Johnny?
Actually, I don't know. I'm just going to stay out of that for exactly the same reason as me not wanting to be a shadow. I'm not sure I want some of the phone calls that I might get saying, are you serious about this guy?
Because he didn't want you to go. I mean, look, I know how big a fan he is of you and how the success and what you've done to help him. You've become, as you said, really good mates. He didn't want you to go. I mean, he's not particularly happy about this, is he?
No, he'd much rather I stay around. But the thing is with Paul is where I love him, he's so open with me. And he just turned around and he said, I want you there, but I only want you there when you want to be there. If you don't, then I don't want you around, really.
Yeah.
He wants my heart and soul when he's got me. And I think, you know, you're so in touch with the modern game, Sarah, and you too, Radar, that we caddies these days have more to do than just carry a bag around. And I invest a lot of time into Paul's schedule and how we decide where suits him and where it doesn't, his statistics and all of the things that go on. So, you know, I was taking my job seriously, naturally. And if I didn't think I was going to do it the whole hog, then I don't really want to do it so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you've always been like that. You're almost, there aren't many like you, like in the respect of a caddy come caddy golfing manager, which is a very good thing. Like, you know, you go about your business in a very professional manner. You know, guys who are blasé about their profession and just go nilly-willy about it, who are great players, you know, I don't think they can handle it. But you get the right player, such as Paul, like, and a Luke, who enjoy that stuff, being guided in the right direction, you come into your element.
So true, you know, because there's a lot of players that probably wouldn't enjoy how I do my job. I mean, I wouldn't say that they wouldn't benefit from it, because that would be remiss of me. However, they kind of like to wear the trousers, if you like, whereas Paul always liked the idea of, if I'm coming up with ideas for him, he knows I've thought them through, rather than worrying about whether he can hit his 7-iron 190 like he does. So I think things through, saves him having to. And the other thing about it, Radar, to me is, just because you're the bag carrier doesn't mean to say you can't have an opinion or be bright enough to know what suits a player most.
Yeah, and it's not to say that you're allowed to be brighter than the player.
Yeah, I mean, Paul's a pretty bright lad, but
yeah. Well, you know, I mean, there are, because you're a golf professional, doesn't actually mean that you are smart.
Sorry, Radar, but I thought that world rankings and intelligence were directly linked.
Now, Johnny, I want to ask you a question. I want the best three things, the greatest moments you've ever had, experienced, your greatest moments, three of them.
Number three would be winning the Argentinian Open with Scott Dunlap.
Gee whiz, that's unreal.
Why?
Because it's such an old tournament to win. It was like, it's one of the, I don't know, maybe three or fourth oldest championships in golf. And Scott's one of my dear friends. And we went, we traveled all around the world together in the early days, in the late 90s. And we went down there and we tried on about three occasions to win and we never managed. And then when we finally struck our victory, it's just one of those things. It was such a fantastic journey for he and I, and yeah, that was magic.
Two,
I think I might actually pull out this little picture. I've got a lovely book, you see, with Luke in it, and it was winning the PGA Wentworth when he went to world number one.
Yeah. Oh well, yeah.
Do you remember everyone was vying for the position?
Yeah.
And we ended up in a playoff with Westwood. And I think that either one of them would have been world number one at the time, but here we go.
Yeah, special week.
And then, funny enough, my favourite probably is winning the Valspar with Paul.
Valspar, we ran a great golf course.
We'd sort of... We felt so euphoric when that happened because we'd been knocking at the door. He hadn't won in America since, what was it, 2009, was it?
And then defending it.
But the first time round was just, he and I were beside ourselves. We were just so happy. It was,
yeah.
I guess, so much work gone into our relationship of, we were chipping away at the stats and working on his pitching, and it just came together and it was amazing.
Really good. Top three, and yeah, kind of obviously amazing success with Luke, and then the Valspar, as you said, of special times. So who was easy to work for then, Luke or Paul?
They're so different, aren't they?
Of course, yeah. I mean, or even, I know, in jest, you don't have to answer that. What about maybe some of the, you know, the strengths of both and maybe some characteristics that we probably don't know about either Paul or Luke that you saw firsthand and you were able to kind of, you know, help the individual in their growth as a golfer and a player?
I was always impressed with Luke's mental fortitude, you know, without being rude to him and his skills, he could hit some pretty dreadful shots sometimes, and it was literally water off a duck's back. He took no notice of those shots where they would have made me potentially think about whether I'm in the right profession. He just carried on, hold a putt, and made birdie from places that you couldn't possibly imagine. So, yeah, that side of him was fantastic. Paul, his huge strength is his ball striking. Now, that's where they're so funny as two people to have worked for 6 years, each of them. When Paul's ball striking goes off, he doesn't have anything like the mental fortitude to handle it. And he kind of crumbles, and he relies on it so much. So you've got literally the flip of the coin with those two. If you could put them together, you'd probably have Tiger Woods, I guess.
But you kind of helped on that aspect as well by becoming good friends, and you kind of touched on it earlier. Do you think you've had that sort of relationship with Paul to be able to, you know, to stand up to him, to be honest, and maybe tell a player a few home truths?
I think it's essential that you are honest. Otherwise, how do you get better? You know, the whole thing is to be better at your profession, but for both of us, the player and the caddy. And I think that if, obviously, the one thing that I feel is probably the most important is the mutual respect. Like, I have huge respect for the people I work for. And we've touched on some of them, you know, like Duffy Waldorf, Anders Hansen, Luke. I mean, these people came to my wedding because I consider them dear enough friends to invite them along. And, you know, that's part of what I am. I give my soul to this when I go and join them. And I said the same to Paul. You know, when I said yes, it was a full yes, and I'd back him all the way. And I've got great respect for him, and he does for me. So the mutual respect thing, I think, is enormous.
Yeah.
Massive. Well said.
I mean, we're looking at Paul in this stage in his career, everything he's achieved, you know, and still now in his 40s, Johnny, he seems as hungry as ever to me. Would you agree that he still believes probably there's a very good few years left in his career, and he's got one major thing that he'd like to tick off? How do you kind of look at those chances for Paul to take that next step in his career and try and land a major title?
We talked about it, Sarah, because it was the journey that Luke wanted to go down. Once he'd been number one in the world, he'd won both money lists. He started the quest of winning a major, and it took us down a road that maybe now he perhaps wish he hadn't. But Paul and I talked about it, and I said, you know, if you're going to make that choice in your career now, I would be careful, just because if you start just thinking about four events a year, I don't know that Paul's the type of player that would be able to just rise to those four and just handle playing just okay, almost like warm-up events for them. Because, as I said earlier, I think that his game needs to be strong enough that he feels mentally at ease with it. So it has to be sharp enough, meaning he could win at any week. I think he could win the Masters. I always have. He's got great knowledge of the place. He almost just needs that little bit of fortune, and then he could, well, you know, I mean, he showed two, three years ago, he got on a run that looked like he might have actually tied the course record there for a while. So, I mean, he's capable of things at the Masters. There's no question. I think he can win a major. I still do.
Oh, I do too. I absolutely do. And I think in his 40s, you know, up to 50, he's so fit, Johnny. He's got everything. He's coming on very, very nicely. These might be his best years.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, Like I said, I'd like to see him with some other caddy, just because, you know, I wonder at times whether I've become so friendly with him that maybe I've taken a little edge out of him. Even Paddy Harrington said to us at the Ryder Cup, he said, I need a bit more of that old Paul Casey sort of like grit to win. And maybe I've compromised that part of him a fraction.
Well, I don't know about that.
Yeah, it's interesting though, isn't it? And so, Johnny, your last Dubai Desert Classic, that's your last week with him.
Yeah, we're going to defend next year, yeah.
Yeah, and then you're going to head back to the UK, and you're going to take the kids on the school run, help your wife with the family chores, do a bit of food shopping, and take it easy, is that right?
That's pretty much it, yeah.
And the way you are speaking, come and take our jobs at Sky Sport.
I don't want to take it. Maybe I'll join you.
Yeah, there you go.
What's going to happen to the sock deal? I mean, you've got a great little gig over there in the US.
I know. I've actually started to see a few people copying, actually. So maybe that's a sign.
Yeah, it was a great addition. It was really so different. Really cool.
And Johnny, what about, you know, we like to, when we get a guest on, we like to hear a couple of embarrassing stories. And we know sometimes, you know, as a caddy player relationship, you got to protect your player a little bit. I get that. Is there anything that you can share with us though, maybe from your time with Luke or with Paul, or even from, you know, one of your like best caddy mates on tour? I know you're good friends with Lordy. Anything that you can share with us that has never been broadcast live anywhere in the world before?
Well, actually, us lads like to play a game that it's called the repeat game.
Okay.
So when you can try to get the person to say it over again and then try to find the right situation. So Fuchs and myself and Lordy and Terry Mundy, we're all quite big on this game. But you've got to obviously pick the right moment to try to get your player to say the thing over again. And one of my particular favourites was at the PGA, and he's about to hit his shot, and there's a marshal moving around. And Paul has a bit of a thing with marshals. You'd know this, Radar. He'd basically like to stick a big sword into every one of them, it seems. so this marshal's moving around and Paul's literally on edge and he's just sitting there going, can you stand still? And he's shouting at this guy and I'm just stood by the bag. Anyway, he carries on, gets back in, said marshal moves again and Paul just shouts over at him again. He goes, I said, can you stand still, please? And he just does this again and hits his shot, beautiful shot onto the green, and turns around to me and he goes, ah, he said, it's so annoying. Why do you have to say everything twice to these marshals? And I said, you what, mate? He goes, why do you have to say everything twice? And of course, I just fell about on the floor.
And he was.
I mean, he's literally in pieces. He goes, you can't do this to me now. I'm so angry. You what, mate? You can't. No, no. And it was just that little moment of repeats.
Brilliant.
Very good.
Yeah, they're brilliant fun. And you can try your hardest to get the right moment. We did have another one at, I got him with his other, my other favourite repeat line was heading to the 10th tee at Pebble Beach playing with Don Collar and the head of FedEx. And it's like 7 in the morning. Radar, you know, it's a tough tee shot, that 10th there in the cold.
Yeah.
And we're stood there and they've got these little breakfast burritos. And I had a bite of them and I said, wow, those things are amazing, Paul. Have you tried them? And he's like, no. And he had one and it had jalapenos in him. And he said, oh, it's going to repeat on me all day. I said, you what, mate? He said, yeah, it's going to repeat on me all day. I'm like, you what? And he went for a third go in it. I never even made it to the tee because I was giggling so much.
That makes me chuckle, that. I like that.
What about, I hate to say it, I hate to use the word cock up, but one of my funniest moments was when I was at the Tour Champs.
What's that? What did you say? What was that, Sarah?
Very good, very good. The Tour Champs, was it a couple of years ago when didn't he have, it was two, he got picked the wrong iron or you gave him. No, he picked it out of his bag. It was the wrong club, wasn't it? And then he gave me a look alive on TV. Just remind us about that, because that was brilliant.
Well, he had...
In the moment where you think, shit, I've messed up here.
I'm going to say it's hardly an important shot, is it, into the 18th in the Tour Championship, 15 million on the line.
Exactly.
The pin was back right. We had 228 yards to the flag with the wind slightly in off the left. And Paul, I said to Paul, we got to land this 8 yards short of the flag. That's 220, hurting a little bit. It's a 230 shot. It's your perfect four iron, mate. And we even chatted about a guy dressed in red just left of the flag. And I said, so, right, got that window, yeah, chap in red. Nothing else to think about, Paul, perfect four iron. So, of course, he grabs his club out the bag. I step back a bit and he hits this shot absolutely perfectly. And I'm watching thinking, wow, this is going to go probably to 8 feet for eagle. And it one hops, nearly hits the guy in the red over the green. And obviously Paul just sits there staring at me because he thinks I've got the wrong yardage. And I know I haven't because I know where I am relative to the water and been there enough. And he's literally speechless because he wants to tell me off so badly. And then he's got hold of the club really near the end by the actual club head. And he's looking at me going, how on earth have we done? And then he looks down and he's got the one that doesn't have a number on. So he's looking in the bag and the four's still in the bag. And he's like, oh, Johnny, I've just hit a 3 iron, mate. And of course I'm sitting there going, well, no wonder it's over the green. And we have this little moment together. But it was all his doing.
Isn't that bizarre? You was a good golfer yourself, Johnny. Isn't that bizarre as a professional golfer to look down and a moment of madness it must have been not to know exactly, because you know we could play golf without numbers on our clubs.
The head on those two clubs are the same. He's just had one bent and they got rid of the number.
Oh, I see.
So
okay.
And a slightly hanging lie where he's hitting a fade in. I mean, I know what you mean. It's a ridiculous error.
But it wasn't your error.
It wasn't my error. Despite the fact Justin Leonard was throwing me under the bus big time on air live.
Yeah.
Saying it was an enormous error on the caddy's part.
We defended you, Johnny. And I remember, because I got Paul over to the Sky Car after for an interview. And he was a little sheepish. He was like, no, that was all me. Johnny got the hook there.
There's another place he could win. He's had much success around there, Eastlake.
Yeah, it perfectly suited to Paul. It's a ball striker's heaven.
Yeah, it certainly is.
I mean, I really think that Paul should do well at the Players' Championship, but I'm totally in love with it for him.
Definitely. And Johnny, before we let you go, just a final word. Obviously, you're going to be out at the golf scene. I know you're going to miss it, but I'm sure you're going to keep in touch with everybody, and we're going to miss seeing you out there with your long socks. And you know, it's always one of my favourite things, turning up to an event in the States and seeing your smiling face. So we're going to miss you. But how do you see the next few years, just from a caddy's perspective, in terms of guy who knows the world of golf really well, in terms of the changing dynamic and landscape, you know, what next 5-10 years, what is the world of golf going to look like? Are we going to see this world global tour? How interesting is it going to be?
Well, I think before we get to that, I think Radar mentioned, I saw him last week and he was saying he doesn't think I'll be out of the game for very long. And, you know, I won't say I'm done, definitely not. I just want to break for a while, basically recharge my batteries. Mm. And then back to where I was saying earlier, you know, so that I'm able to give the full 100% again, which is going to require my energy really as much as anything. Catch up with the kids, catch up with the family. I don't see this break being forever either, Radar. I did mention that to you. And then the game of golf, where it's heading. I mean, it's really exciting what's going on. I just hope it doesn't get to a point where people feel bitter about what they might be not getting or should be getting. And, you know, because it's a beautiful game and everyone does all right out of it. And I hope we don't get too spoiled and think that we should be getting more and that ruins it. But where it ends up, I don't know. The global idea, I suppose, came from the Greg Norman days. The Kerry Packer type thing springs to mind with branch off tours. And I hope that we can stay unified, if I'm honest.
Let's hope it doesn't become, as you say, Johnny, let's hope it doesn't become the old, like, South African, you know, remember the old Rebel cricket tour?
Yeah.
I hope it doesn't end up like that.
So do I. You know, I think, especially as we've got such a beautiful old game that's built on respect, and it'd be nice if it could continue.
Well, look, we'll miss you out there. Wishing you the best in your semi-retirement. And yeah, hope to see you back out there. But keep in touch.
Good on you, Johnny.
Have a great Christmas.
Oh, we're both massive fans. I love Johnny Mac. I think he's a top caddy. I think he's super professional. But I'm going to miss him out on tour. But Redo, you think he could be back sooner than maybe we all think?
Yeah, I do. I'm not sure he'll do as much in the States. I think he'll do a lot, but I don't think it'll be permanent fixture over there. This is just my call. Maybe I'm wrong. But with the European tour coming on leaps and bounds, becoming more of a world tour, and the finances over here, the rewards are going to be great for caddies as well. You know, you can come in and out. You can go Tuesday morning as a caddy now, and you can come home Sunday night. So there's plenty of time with the family over here in Europe. So maybe he might see it that way. You know, I give the guy probably a year, 18 months out of it, probably a few guest appearances along the way for people who are in a bit of trouble. And, yeah. You know, I see him back. You know, I think he'll be back doing his stuff and probably come back bigger and better as a caddy, which is very difficult to do because he's had such success. But, you know, everyone needs time out. I had 2 years after I was finished back in the day. I had 2 years. I went back to Sydney and just, you know, did some other stuff. And then I found the media and you know, but at 2 years, it does you wonders. You come back a totally new person. You know, I had 20 years on the road or, you know, on the European tour and 3 or 4 years before that. So, you know, it wears you down. But 2 years, 18 months, it does wonders just to get away from it and meet people and friends and not talk about golf. Just totally get away from it. And which is difficult, but it will happen for him. But he'll be back. Yeah, I'm pretty sure of it.
And I think, you know, I don't know, it's been interesting who Paul leans on in terms of that caddy for the next however long. But I think there was such a great relationship. I think he's going to miss him big time. It's been a massive...
Oh, he'll miss him.
Yeah.
He'll miss him, but he'll find someone else. I think Paul's pretty easy to caddy for. I mean, you know, he's a fine player and you know, I think that, you know, if you're a smart caddy, and Paul asked you to caddy for him, if I was a caddy and Paul said, would you come and caddy for me? I'd go, yes. Would you mind if I went, Paul, to Johnny Longsocks and had a chat to him for an hour?
Mm.
That wouldn't be a bad thing to do.
No.
And but I think no, it won't be. I don't think Paul's a difficult guy to caddy for. He's a money-making machine. He's got the goods. So he's not going to struggle to find a caddy, and he's certainly not going to struggle to find a good one.
Exactly. Look, Redo, I feel like so much has happened in the world of golf since our Ryder Cup episode, and I want to get on to the kind of Saudi Arabian angle and obviously the change in name for the European Tour in terms of the DP World and the sponsorship. I want to get onto that in a minute. But can I just also, you were covering Dubai at the weekend. I was in studio covering the CME Group Tour Championship. You won't have seen any of it because obviously you were covering the DP World, then flying back. But Jin Young Ko, I just wanted to kind of big up the girls and give a little mention to the women's game, because this season has been incredible. And we had Radar at the end of the season. We've had Nelly Korda, who has won four times on the LPGA Tour and picked up the gold medal at the Olympics. And then we had Jin Young Ko heading into the CME Group Tour Championship, world number two. So Nelly's world number one, Jin Young Ko world number two. She came into Naples and they were both vying for the Rolex Player of the Year, basically. So it all came down to the final day, final week of the season. Jin Young Ko went on to win for her fifth title of the season. And how about this? I don't know if you saw this stat. She finished her week hitting 63 straight greens in reg.
Oh, that's ridiculous. I didn't see that.
Yeah.
63 greens in a row.
Yeah, 63 straight greens in reg. And it was just... Honestly, I think we talk about, you know, I know you're a big fan of the women's game. We try and push. We're trying to do more in terms of media and exposure. This season on the LPGA Tour has been fantastic. But to have two players at the top of their game and a genuine rivalry developing between the two, for Nelly and Jin Young Ko, has just been unbelievable. And I just think kudos to both for the season they've had, but also pushing each other as well to greater things. And it's just been incredible to watch.
Has anyone ever done 63 greens in a row?
I don't think so.
That's incredible.
So, yeah, so her last nine LPGA starts, five wins, four rounds in the 70s, 29 in the 60s, 11 bogey-free, 67.4 scoring average, 87.8 greens in reg. And, yeah, she hit her last hitting 63 straight, finishes her week with that statistic. So I just wanted to just a little shout out and mention to those two, because
it's
been seriously fun to watch. So yeah, come on then. So Greg Norman, officially named CEO of this Saudi Arabian funded entity. So we're looking at about 200 million Radar into the Asian tour over the next 10 years. The Saudi Arabia we've talked about a lot before with the Premier Golf League. How... Greg Norman, I know, obviously was the guy who talked years ago about this world tour. Now, this new venture starting in 2022, and obviously with the Asian tour, is different to the Premier Golf League. And we're still waiting to hear more about that. How surprising, or how have you kind of viewed this over the last couple of months in terms of the changes that we're now seeing and how the landscape in golf is seemingly changing all the time, and what we could be in for witnessing over the next few years?
Yeah, it's one of those things that I think they've got the right guy, because Greg came up many moons ago with this, and the powers that be, he wanted a world tour, and I've always thought that was a great idea, to have 20 tournaments around the world with the greatest players that we can all watch play on a big stage. And I still believe that. But now we've got little breakaway tours, and not little, huge breakaway tours if this all happens. But Greg Norman, I think, is the right man for the job, because they bought the Asian tour, so I believe, and Australia are interested in going. Greg's got huge pull in Australia and over there in Asia, in the Pacific area. So... they have the right guy, and there's no doubt about that. How it's going to work, I don't know. Who's going to go on it? I don't know. I'm hearing names that are thinking about going. I believe I'm not going. I don't want to stand here and people come at me and go, well, I'm going to take you to court. I've heard that Westwood, the Roses, the Brysons, the I heard Brooks, whether that's true, I don't know. I've heard that so many people have been headhunted to come onto this tour, and I hear it's very, very soon that we're going to find out who is going and who's not. It's huge. It's a huge story, and no one knows. It's all ever so secretive.
But we are looking at two tours here, aren't we? We're looking at two different establishments, basically. The link with the Asian.
I heard that the Premier League one might not happen. But this Saudi tour fronted by Greg Norman, him being the commissioner, I hear that's all go. That's all go. But it's a matter of, you know, the PGA Tour, the European Tour, if you leave these tours to go and play here for huge amounts of money, appearance fees, I don't think you'll be allowed to come back. I think you would, if you wanted to be a Ryder Cup captain, that would be curtains. I mean, you wouldn't be able to ever come back and play. But I'm also hearing that, well, how can they be stopped? Like, that's a restriction of trade. You can't tell somewhere where to play. I want to play 12 there and I want to go play 10 there. Who are you to tell me where to go and play? It's going to be very interesting. I think the lawyers are going to get as rich as the players.
Yeah, I agree, because it's mad. Yeah, I can't see how it's. I said this before when we were talking about the Premier Golf League, and now we've got this, obviously the new breakaway headed by Greg, and you're looking at the Asian Tour, and you're looking at who's going to go and how it's all going to work. But it feels pretty divisive to me still. And like you say, you know, I still feel my big thing with this is the top players are going to go. They've kind of all got to go together, because it's only going to work really if you've got the big names. You can't have like one or two big names. You kind of need them all to go. And there's risk to it. Yeah, they can go and they can make millions and millions and millions, more millions than they're already making. But like you said, then there's, you know, you're not going to be welcome back on the world tour, the DP World Tour or the PGA Tour. And how's that going to play out? It's so risky. It's hard to fathom how it will unfold.
There's other things too, Sarah. There's other things. If they're going to announce this very soon.
Yeah.
You don't announce a huge tour like that without having TV, because there isn't a tour without TV. If you haven't got TV, you aren't getting your product out there.
Yeah.
Who's going to show it? We don't know. No one knows who. Someone knows who's going to show it. You've got to have commentators. You can't have a golf tournament without commentators. Who are the commentators that are going to go? Yeah. I sit here and I go, well, there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, at the end of the day, if the people we work with, you know, if they were to show it and they said, right, you're off there to show, you're like, well, right, well, whether that happens, I don't know. I don't really, as long as we are showing golf and we are showing the best championships we possibly can. But I can't see that, because if you're inviting and paying amazing, huge amounts of money to certain people and the others not, you're basically only showing six or seven players.
Yeah. Exactly.
So I don't know. But they obviously have a plan. They have a plan, but no one knows what the plan is. It's like this ghost ship that's just cruising around at the moment in the dark. We can't see it, but we will. It'll come out and it'll just be big white and it'll be in the sunshine. Well, I don't know. It's just Are you hearing the same sort of stuff?
Yeah, I think it's mad. I think, you know, we work in the sport. We love golf. It's a great game. But things are clearly changing and things are clearly moving. But I just think it's fascinating, because at the moment, I can't see. It just all seems so fragmented. They've obviously got their big agenda. They've got a huge amount of money. I still think there's the moral aspect with anything the Saudi Arabia funded entity. I still think, you know, Rory's talked about it, there's a morality question mark with that. Rory's talked about, you know, the is it just solely about money? You know, are we just going because a player's just going to go because they can make, you know, more millions than they already are? It's about, as Rory said, putting your place in history in the game, winning majors, and there's a legacy with the PGA Tour and all this success. I can't look ahead and picture this in 2 or 3 years' time. I'm still quite confused about how it's all going to play out. But it's fascinating, and it's fascinating for us to talk and discuss. But yeah, I don't know. It's a case of watch your space.
No, I'm hearing some extortionate amounts of money. I'm hearing some unbelievable amounts of money. Like, it's, you know, just for some older players.
Yeah.
For some older players, just offered amazing money. Like, okay, if you get to yourself 45 years of age and you've already got 70 million and someone says, right, okay, I'm going to give you, for 10 events a year, I'm going to give you 60 million for 5 years. What does that man do? Does he go, everyone who listens to our podcast, they're going to go, well, obviously they're all sitting there, you go.
I get that, don't you? It's like the player at that stage in their career, they've achieved a lot and their heads are going to be swayed by money. I get that. But I can't see, you know, a JT, a Rory, a Morikawa.
No, not taking that leap
because they're just, what's the point? They've got millions. They're going to make millions. Do they need an extra 30 million? It's all about, you know, they're in the game to win majors, to put their place in history. What's another 10, 20, 30 million?
Yeah, and are you going to put bums on seats?
Yeah.
With 45-year-olds?
Exactly.
Playing at the same time as Rory McIlroy, Colin Morikawa, all these great players, Justin Thomas's, all the Jordan Spieths, who are playing on the other side of the world, which one are you going to watch? It's quite, we've never seen it before in golf, but... Yeah, stay tuned because I hear the announcements. Well, it needs to be soon, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's fascinating. And I think from the European Tour point of view, rename the DP World Tour. Did you kind of like that move in terms of Keith Pelley has said before, kind of more representative of the fact we are a world tour? But what intent did that signal for you, the kind of renaming and the obviously the massive partnership with DP World? It's a good move, isn't it? And very positive signs.
100%, yeah. If someone puts in so much money to take a tour, the DP World Tour, forward, why shouldn't they have the naming rights? Back in the day, we had I won't mention the sponsor now because, you know, those days are gone, but we had a car company that was their tour, but now that's been gone. It's always just been the European Tour, but now the naming sponsor is DP World, and good on them. I mean, they're bringing the chocolates. Good on them. We've got them for 10 years, and I'm sure that won't be it. I think they'll be happy with the product going around the world, and why shouldn't they keep going? It's not going to be 10 years, and they're just going to go away. I think you'll find that they're going to love the camaraderie. They're going to love the relationship they have with the European Tour. Now it's just a great product. Our PGA Tour are coming in. It's all great. It's all great. It's all fantastic, but... Yeah, you know, we've got this white elephant in the room and we can't see it.
No, but we will. It's going to be visible soon. We will.
Yep.
Now, we a lot to get through, and obviously we've cracked through most of it. I forgot to mention, Radar, that earlier when I was talking about the CME Group Tour Championship, I was in studio at the weekend with Dame Laura Davies, who is one of my all-time favourite studio guests to work with. She's a legend, by the way. I think I've told you this before. She makes the best sandwiches, and she made us lemon drizzle cake as well at the weekend. It was
sensational. Dame makes the sandwiches.
She makes the sandwiches.
What sort of sandwiches?
Well, we had roast beef and mustard. Then we had poached salmon and cucumber. And she made cheese and onion. And then she bakes the most amazing. We need to get her on Celebrity MasterChef or Celebrity Bake Off, one of the two, because she's an absolute legend. And I was also working with Simon Holmes. So we were kind of chatting about, you know, obviously what was going on. Celine Boutier, he was leading after 36 holes. And we were chatting about Celine Dion and the Titanic in our sort of studio discussions, off camera, of course. And then Simon Holmes decides live on air at the end of the show to call Celine Boutier Celine Dion. And me,
yeah, well, that'd be right. Simon's an idiot.
Me and Damo Well, we lost it. So I think let's have a listen to it. Let's hear what actually happened.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, isn't it? You've got the sort of the beginning of this week, you had Nelly Korda and Jin Young Ko. And what's so crucial in these final tournaments is that the rivalry works so that both of the players have really played well. Like Jin Young Ko shot 500 pars a day. Nelly Korda battled it with a 300 par. They're both right there. So the big stars are doing the right thing. It's going to be interesting to see, will Celine Boutier be able to hold off those big stars? And you'd have to say, you know, they're going to put a lot of pressure all the way.
Well, if Celine Dion,
you know, there you go.
He did it on purpose.
He did it. I do love this. And I lost it. Thank God it was the end of the show because I couldn't continue. Brilliant. What is... What's the biggest fail? What's the epic fail you've made on Live on Air with the incorrect name? You must have a golden one.
No. I'll be a ultimate professional. if I get someone really dodgy, like they've got a tricky name, if he's got a very difficult name to pronounce, like from Thailand or somewhere like that, I just go, the boy from Thailand. So listeners, when you hear me go, the man from Denmark, it means I can't pronounce his name.
There you go.
He's got a four-eyed.
Tricks of the trade. And finally, Radar, what about, did you see Tiger Woods back hitting balls? Obviously,
yes.
Everyone's gone nuts on social media. Fantastic to see, and we're all getting very excited now because we're like, when's he going to come back? When are we going to see him in tournament action?
Yeah, fantastic. It means the right foot certainly isn't as bad as the left foot, because the left ankle, because the right one, look, he's always a little tilted to the left anyway, in the respect he's a little, his weight's more, not really centered. It's just fractionally further on his left. So he doesn't really move off his left side a heck of a lot. That's why he covers the ball so well. So, look, this is very doable. And the way he was swinging the ball, the club there, with that big stocking down his right ankle, it looked very good. It looked like he hadn't been away. I actually really had to have a good look because I thought it was a dodgy one. Like I thought it was someone else, Tiger, someone else's swing with someone else's head on it. Although, has he come back and I checked it out? No, it's Tiger. I really did. I got there and I went, is that him? Is that him? Surely not. And he's hitting it at about 75%. You know, can the GOAT come back and win another major? Oh.
As if we haven't got enough to talk about in the world of golf, excitement levels have reached new heights, Tiger back hitting balls, and we're all extremely excited about 2022. Radar, it's been nice to chat to you again. I missed you. It's fun to catch up and obviously discuss what's been going on. So I'm going to leave you to go and dry your underpants behind you.
They're not mine.
And we're going to do a Christmas special. We're going to have an end of year little Christmas special. We're going to look back at some of the highlights and we'll have a special guest for you as well.
But no worries. But I'll be doing that from Sydney, everybody. So still be good.
How excited are you to get back to the motherland?
Yeah, I'll be all right. Yeah, looking forward to going back and seeing my folks. I'm only back for 6 weeks and then we're back on the road to go up there to Abu Dhabi, you know, go to the beach and play a little bit of golf back there and maybe have a couple of cold beers and watch a few horses go around.
Nice. A few electric lemonades. Not jealous at all of your Christmas in Sydney. Radar, we'll speak to you soon. And everybody, thank you for listening. Remember, Sturkers Radar on Twitter, Sturkers and Radar Pod on Instagram. Thank you for listening. Sturkers and Radar Uncut, brought to you by
Ping. Brought to you by Ping. Play your best.
This has been a Monkey Pants Productions podcast.